From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Philadelphia in October of 1839. A young man named Robert Cornelius was fascinated with photography, even thinking about opening his own photography business. But so many portraits of that era turned out to be formal, what we might call today stuffy. Cornelius had something different in mind. He was about to take what we would call a selfie, probably the world's first. That 1839 selfie of Robert Cornelius has some similarities with today's selfies, but plenty of differences. First of all, it took anywhere from 3 to 15 minutes to take it, depending on the amount of light available. He was standing in the yard behind his family's lamp store, and the Library of Congress says he was beholden to the rather primitive technology of the silver-plated daguerreotype. But the result was not all that different from some serious selfies of 2017. It's off-center. Cornelius is not perfectly groomed. He has stubble. His hair is mussed up, even a little sexy, scandalous. Maybe it's cool to consider the world's first selfie, or maybe we should be cursing Robert Cornelius' name as the father of the selfie. But according to Amanda Kearney, we shouldn't be so quick to dismiss the selfie or mock it. Amanda is a grad student in the School of Communication at RIT. She's been researching uses and gratification of posting selfies on social media, and she says it's not just narcissism, although I'm not sure she can weigh in on the ego of Robert Cornelius. My guests this hour include Amanda Kearney, who appears in the selfie I just took of us here in the studio and posted it on Twitter. She is the grad student behind her thesis, Uses and Gratification of Posting Selfies on Social Media. Amanda, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. It's great to be here.
And Jonathan Schroeder is here. He's a professor in the School of Communication at RIT, has had a lot of thoughts to share about selfies and about culture and a lot of the intersections of these themes. So it's great to have you, Jonathan. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
I just posted a selfie that's far from my first. And so let's get this out of the way, Amanda and Jonathan. Anybody who's mocking selfies, not anybody, but many people who mock selfies are probably taking selfies at some point, right?
I think that most people, they do take selfies. So basically, the selfie exists kind of in this paradox, right, where we enjoy taking them, but we like to mock them. We kind of think that, you know, when other people do it, it's a little narcissistic. It's kind of childish in a way. But when we do it, we all have our own justifications for them.
Sure. It's a what's good for thee, but not for me kind of a situation.
Exactly.
Jonathan, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think we think of our own selfies as expressive and authentic, but other people use selfies for nefarious reasons and, you know, to be criticized. It's really interesting. And that's one of the things that Amanda's research found is this selfie paradox, which I think is a really interesting concept.
There are more layers to this than I figured there would be before we had a chance to kind of dig into what Amanda has been looking at. And so we're going to be focusing on what this says about us here in 2017. Is it as simple as just narcissism? Again, they say it's not, and we're going to talk about why. But maybe you are more cynical. And listeners, as we go throughout the hour, we will hear from you on some of this. Do you tell your own kids, maybe cool it with the self-portraits? Are you worried about what that does for either ego or self-confidence or this idea that we must be validated in the Instagram world, that kind of a thing? We'll talk about all those things, but let me just start by asking Amanda, as a grad student in the School of Communication, why you wanted to focus on this particular subject in the first place?
Well, you know, I'm honestly just really fascinated by selfies. I remember several years ago, I was just kind of mindlessly scrolling through my Facebook news feed, and a woman who I follow had posted a selfie with like this giant tub of cat treats, and the caption said, "Just bought the cat treats," and she looked beautiful. She was all done up, but it was her in a kitchen with cat treats, and it wasn't the cat with the cat treats. It wasn't like
fascinated.
Yes,
see, this is for the people who are like, it's narcissism. We're like, you're not the story. The cat treats are the story.
Right. So that just kind of opened my eyes to it a little bit, though, that there's something here that people are doing this. And that was peculiar to me. So I kind of wanted to just look into that and why. Why are we behaving this way? Is it accessibility or is it for some other kind of, you know, driving factors there?
See, again, that feels a little bit like evidence to say that selfies are all about, enough about me, what do you think of me? How many likes can we get on this? How many likes do I need before I feel like this selfie is exactly what I want? How many selfies did I take and edit out before I chose the one? So that kind of set it off for you. But obviously, it's not that simple. And we're going to walk through this. But how do you research this? How do you go about conducting the kind of work that you want to do to kind of take it seriously?
So in order to do my research, we made up a survey. And I know that my surrounding friend group isn't exactly the demographic that I'm looking for. I was kind of looking for people who are posting many, many, many selfies. So I joined a lot of Facebook groups that were selfie related. So probably 10 to 15 different Facebook groups just focused on selfies. And I learned a lot through that. So I had to acclimate to the culture a little bit to get these people to trust me to take my survey. So I had to start posting selfies and kind of start communicating with people that way to kind of get used to that. And it was really eye-opening. There's this whole community that these people have built off of, you know, posting selfies, sharing selfies, that I think is satisfying more than, you know, just look at me. Of course, that is an element to some of it, but there's other people who are looking for moral support, or they're looking for, you know, I'm just looking for a friend, that kind of thing. And it was really, really interesting. And eventually I got this demographic to take my survey where we discovered some gratifications that people are seeking when they post selfies on social media.
And we're getting to the point where on an annual basis, the Darwin Awards are including people who were injured or died taking a selfie in a dangerous place. And we can laugh at that, but I think that that leads to some of the stereotyping of younger generation. So what are the stereotypes that you and your friends endure when it comes to this kind of culture, selfie culture?
I mean, I think the biggest stereotype that comes to my mind is like the peace sign, kissy face, you know, that kind of an idea. And it's, when I think of that, it's almost, it's ditzy, right? It's kind of like, oh, look at me. And I think that that is what is driving this kind of the stereotype, this narcissistic kind of perception of the selfie, because we picture selfie as that, but we don't really picture the selfie as the communicative tool that it could be or that it is.
So when you put together a survey,
yes,
tell our listeners how you chose to frame those kind of questions and what you wanted to find out.
So I used uses and gratifications theory to frame my survey. I did a lot of research and found 8 gratifications related to social media or selfies or just uses and gratification framework. And basically we asked, we use a Likert scale, you know, range from strongly disagree to strongly agree on a scale of 1 to 7, asking questions like, I post selfies to get attention, I post selfies to escape from reality, those kind of things. And we came up with 5 gratifications that people are seeking when they post selfies on social media.
Okay, and those are?
Those are attention seeking, communication, archiving time, entertainment, and the gratification of escape, which I thought was an interesting one.
Do those one more time, because people are going to want to kind of digest those slowly and make sure we can kind of delineate the meaning. So let's
sure.
go ahead.
All right. So attention seeking, communication, archiving time, entertainment, and escape.
Okay. Archiving time, how would you define that?
Archiving time is basically using selfies to create your own diary or scrapbook in a way. So
sure.
Documenting places you've been, people you've been with, that kind of an idea.
But as the researcher here, I've got to ask you, for people who do it ostensibly to archive time, you don't have to be in the picture. You know, you could take a picture. If you're at the Washington Monument, you can take a picture of the monument. You don't need to be in the Washington. If you're at the Grand Canyon, your mug is probably polluting that image more than it is beautifying the image. The Grand Canyon is beautiful. So why need to be in that kind of an image?
I think that is part of just social media, how social media has influenced how we see visuals at this point. It's almost this need to embed ourselves in that moment to prove that we were actually there.
It's the kind of the equivalent of the I was here on the bathroom stall or carved into a tree.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Yes.
That was an interesting idea that comes from this. Okay. So when you get this survey out there, how many people are you able to work with here?
Well, I originally had about 200 people that responded to my survey. I had to whittle some of that down to people who didn't complete the survey,
sure.
That kind of stuff. So we ended up with 156 participants.
And how did it break down in terms of the response? Why are people doing this?
Well, for those 5 gratifications that we just spoke about.
But I mean, some people are not doing all 5. Some people it's just 1. I mean, they're not telling you it's all of those 5, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's dependent on the person, sure. But there was definitely some different, I had a lot of open-ended responses, and one of the interesting things that came out of this was to ride on top of that paradox of, you know, it's cool when I do it, but it's silly when you do it. there's also this idea of selfie remorse that kind of came out of it too. Hmm. So if I post a selfie and I don't get the response that I'm looking for, a lot of people regret actually posting that selfie because it can be damaging to their self-esteem. So they're using it to boost self-esteem, but at the same time, if the response is not what their hope is, then it can also be detrimental to their self-confidence.
Let me get an email from a listener in Penn Yan. Carrie writes to us on this subject. She says, I'm very interested here. I have some Facebook friends who take and post lots of selfies, and I rarely do so. I've often wondered what that says about us. Does that mean I have low self-esteem? Do selfie fanatics have an inflated sense of their own popularity, or is there more to it?
I definitely think there's more to it. I wouldn't say that somebody who doesn't post selfies has low self-esteem. I think that maybe they gratify or boost their self-esteem in other ways. And those that have high self-esteem, or those who are posting selfies, don't necessarily have high self-esteem. They're maybe looking to boost that confidence with those selfies. But I do think that it's more than that. It's a communicative tool, too. So people are looking to just to start a conversation, to have a response, that kind of a thing.
Okay. This is where I think you can begin to chip away at the it's just narcissism argument, because so far some of our listeners are hearing this going, still sounds like narcissism, still sounds. But what you're saying is when it's a communicative tool, it's not just a look at me, it's a let's have a conversation about something?
Yeah, absolutely. When I was in these selfie groups for however long, that was more of the culture that was there then, the look at me. It was kind of, people would post a selfie and be like, I had a bad day, like that kind of an idea. And people would respond to that, and they create this community of selfie posters where they can support each other. And or people would say like, oh, I had a really good day, I got an A on a test or whatever they did. And people would go, oh, good for you. And they're supposedly strangers, I'm assuming. But so there's this whole community surrounded by them too. And people are making friends that way. I had plenty of friend requests from people that I never actually met, so there's certainly something to it.
All right, I see the phone ringing. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You're hearing Amanda Kearney, an RIT grad student whose thesis was titled Uses and Gratification of Posting Selfies on Social Media. And Jonathan Schroeder is a professor in the School of Communication at RIT. Jonathan, what have you heard so far in this research that tells you it's not just narcissism?
Well, I think one of the interesting things is that people use selfies in different ways on different social media platforms. So that's something that Amanda found and something that other research projects have found, that people use Snapchat in a particular way and they use Facebook in different ways. And so that tells us that there's a complexity about selfies that I think just the general stereotype of selfies equals narcissism just doesn't capture.
Let's just hypothetically pretend that somebody in this room has never done Snapchat, and it might be me. Tell me the difference in terms of selfie culture on Snapchat versus Facebook. Do you want to take that one, Amanda?
Sure. Well, Snapchat itself is it's a bit of a different social media platform than Instagram or Facebook. Snapchat, you take a short video or picture, you send it to your buddies, and it disappears after, I think, a day is how long you can view that content. So Snapchat selfies, this was interesting because we didn't find any gratifications at this point specific to Snapchat. We found certain gratifications specific to Facebook or Instagram, but I think that there's more room to explore with Snapchat. And I think that, Snapchat is opening some doors to different ways in which how we can and may continue to communicate too.
All right. I'm getting a lot of questions and comments in here, so let me start working through these as we continue to go through the research that Amanda's done and the work that Jonathan has done in this field. Brian and Webster on the phone. First, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, hi. Amanda, I wonder if you have any comment on why people take selfies when they're sweating at the gym.
Well, hold on. Brian, do you have any thoughts on that first?
I think it's basically narcissism, but could be something else.
thank you, Brian. I'm gonna let both of our guests answer this question. Let me first say that I can recall just a couple of months ago, a friend was texting me, and I happened to be at the gym. And no, I am not gym bro dude. Don't worry. And this is not a humble brag. It's just where I was impressing nobody. And so I was ignoring the text for the moment. And finally, she texted me and says, you know, where are you at? So I took this hilarious selfie of shrimpy little me at the gym. and I sent it back, you know, ironically, and it got the best laugh I think I've gotten all year, because that's, you know, I'm not gym bro dude, but I do see people very unironically taking selfies at the gym, and hey, they look great. I mean, I look at these, and they go, wow, I wish I looked like that. But is there any good reason? Amanda, you know, it's your research here. Can you defend it?
So something that also came out of some of these open-ended responses is it falls in line with the archiving time gratification of posting selfies. So a lot of people are doing it it's like creating this scrapbook, right? So they're doing it to document how they looked at a moment or to track. I know a lot of women did it to track pregnancy or to track fitness goals. So people will be doing that at the gym, and I'm sure there's different motives for specific gym selfies, which I didn't dig into just gym selfies. but I can see how people would use them to document, you know, I looked this way on X, Y, and Z of a day, and then, you know, 3 months from now I look this way. And people want to feel proud of that progress, too.
So, selfie as motivator.
Selfie as motivator.
I like it.
I think of a friend on Facebook. I've only met this guy once, and I learned through his Facebook posts that he lost about 100 pounds through, you know, exercising at the gym. And so now his typical post is him, you know, with no shirt on, you know, in the gym lifting weights, or with no shirt on a beach in Italy. He happens to live in Italy. And I think if anyone else looked at his Facebook feed, they'd say, oh, wow, this guy's so narcissistic. But I really love his Facebook feed. I think it's just me knowing his story, it puts it in context of, oh, well, yeah, he's just really proud of what he's done, and he's trying to maintain his weight loss and his new shape. So, I mean, I think there's, again, like the selfie paradox, there's always a context to other people's selfies that we don't often know.
Yeah, so here's Paul on Twitter. He says, I love selfies that other people are taking. It adds real context for their enjoyment of life, but I rarely take my own. Jeremy says to us, I hated them until I realized they're a pretty damn good form of communication and self-expression. Okay. And our guests are sort of defending that, too. Let me grab Andrea in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Andrea.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I'm a hairstylist and a personal image consultant. And in our line of work, we often use selfies to demonstrate some kind of professional point we're trying to make. And it really helps because it's such a visual industry.
So it helps your business or it helps your clients?
It helps the audience, the client, to see a visual demonstration of the point you're trying to make.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense to you guys?
Yeah, I think that totally makes sense. I think it makes sense for how you're using them as well and who you want to communicate to, because people are responding to that kind of imagery. We're expecting to see photographs taken in this way now. So it almost draws you in that way too.
Yeah, and that's something I'm really interested in, how brands and companies are using the selfies as part of their marketing efforts and how they use selfies by their customers to promote their brand. I think the selfie from this perspective really comes across as an authentic communication device. And again, it's part of this selfie paradox that companies are really promoting the selfie. They show people having fun, taking selfies on vacations, whereas this there's a broader cultural critique of the selfies as narcissism.
In our second half hour, we're going to kind of wade through selfies for political reasons, which I did find very interesting. And when you talk about the power of social media to move messages and to maybe even spark action, there's something to this here that I probably had not considered until the research here. So we're going to get into that in just a second here. But one of our listeners on Twitter, Steve, sends us to a piece that is written, what is it? This is in theoutline.com. I don't know the source, but the article looks pretty good, and it's called Instagram is Loving Nature to Death. It says lesser-known lookouts are suffering under the weight of sudden online fame, and he brings us to a place called Horseshoe Bend at the Grand Canyon, a pretty remote spot, beautiful. It just happens to be one of these places where if you take a selfie, you can get your face in it, and you can get almost the totality of this beautiful background in it. And so now 4,000 people a day go to the bend to take selfies. They've kind of strained the infrastructure, the roads have deteriorated, the parking lot. There's a little worry about the natural setting of it. And this piece is kind of pointing out that this desire to always prove that you are at these beautiful places has us seeking out these places in ways we didn't before. but doing it in a way that says, look, I was here, and also maybe putting the natural scene at risk there. Jonathan, should we be worried about that?
No, I think this idea of the competitive selfie is a concern. It reminds me of the curator at the Museum of Modern Art's photography department, John Sarkowski. He said 30 or 40 years ago, if you want to preserve something, don't take a picture of it. And I think we see this in a new way with this selfie issue.
But is it a legit concern, you think?
Well, I don't know if it's completely blamed on selfies. I think it's rather blamed on this idea that we have to kind of collect these experiences and events, and it goes toward this idea that you're collecting a badge, you're showing where you were, and I think it's done without a true appreciation of, well, what makes that location special? And if you're tramping down other people to get your selfie taken, you're taking away from that specialness.
Okay, agree there?
Yeah, I agree completely with Jonathan. I think there's a difference too between, like how Jonathan said, like this competitive kind of nature of selfies versus just taking a selfie. You know, we have the stereotypical bathroom selfie. Like, there's more of that going on, I think, than there is this competitive, I need to be in this most beautiful place and I need to show the world that I was in the most beautiful place. I think that that's actually a smaller percentage of selfie posters than people who are just doing it because they have access and they want to hang out, they want to talk.
So do we blow it out of proportion? Do we see those selfies in those spots? And even if it's a small percentage of the pictures being taken there, do we tend to inflate this idea that, well, millennials, blah, 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 or all, young people, blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, I think it's really easy to jump to those conclusions, especially if you're taking selfies in these beautiful places. They're likely to get shared more, and so more people are going to see them, and then that might make it seem more frequent that, more people are doing this, or that people are doing this simply. They're going there and they're not appreciating the scenery. They're just going there to take a selfie to prove they were there. But I don't think that is, the norm necessarily.
Here's Dr. Elizabeth Murray listening and posting on Twitter. This is a great point. She says, selfies can help normalize behavior, sometimes for good, sometimes not. But here's an example of one that's for good. She said she took a flu shot selfie. She's a doctor. She wants people to not only think about flu shots, but Dr. Murray is also certainly keen on vaccines and the benefits of vaccination. And so in those moments, when you're there, her point is, it's not necessarily about you. It's about sort of spreading that message of the value and benefits of something, which I think, Jonathan, will line up with what we're going to talk about in our second half hour, which is sometimes political messaging and movement of ideas, right?
Yeah. I mean, selfies as self-representation is a big part of the selfie discussion. The people who traditionally haven't had the power to represent themselves, so young people, maybe minorities, now have that power. And I think a lot of them are grasping it, and it's become a kind of a source of cultural conflict.
We're going to get some specific examples that are very interesting coming up here in just a moment. Let me grab one more phone call in our first half hour. This is Benjamin and Henrietta. Go ahead, Benjamin.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I was wondering, do you think all this picture taking and selfie taking, do you ever think it devalues our experience in the present, like kind of taking us out of the moment? Or on the flip side, do you think it's just a different or equal kind of value way to experience it?
It's a great question. Thank you, Benjamin. Well, do you want to weigh in first before our guests do too? What do you think?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, do you have some thoughts on this too, Benjamin?
As I was creating the question, I kind of came up with that retort thinking, maybe it is just a different way to experience it, because I'm not trying to be too opinionated on it either way, because, I'm just trying not to take life too seriously here.
Sure. Thanks, Benjamin. Thanks for the phone call. Thoughts on that, Jonathan?
No, I think this is a broader issue about how important these technologies are to our lives. I mean, most of us really can't live without our smartphone anymore. We can't even conceive of how we'd live without photography. And I think that these kind of issues bring in this concern that we're not focusing on the present. We're not looking at this beautiful place that we're seeing. We're taking a picture of it. But also that we're not focused on our friends, our friends in a community. We're focused on our Facebook friends.
I think, though, I got to say, Andrew, Amanda, I think I've had these concerns But I think they're a little overblown. And here's what I mean by that. The criticism is, as Jonathan just articulated, you're not focusing on the moment or the place you're in, you're taking a picture. But that picture can be taken in 10 seconds if you're at a place for an hour. You know, I mean, I was hiking at Taconic Falls with my son. We took a few pictures, and then we probably took a selfie or two. That took all of 30 seconds out of our hour-long hike. And I would not say that it ruined or took us out of that moment, because I had plenty of moments where we just sat and took in the scenery. The difference, I think, is when you're at a sporting event. I mean, I was at a playoff baseball game recently. I can't believe how many people are watching through their phones, or at a concert, watching through your phones. And I know we're getting a little outside of selfies here, but I would rather experience that moment, you know, not through the lens of a camera, but just with my own eyes. That's the difference. How do you see this?
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think that people enjoy content and experiences differently. So I'm not one necessarily who, when I go out, I don't take a lot of selfies. I actually take very few photographs even, because I just like being absorbed where I am. But other people, I think, want that proof of being there and that they want to be able to reminisce on those moments. And I think that that might almost just be a personal preference. And now that we do have the access to document those things, there is kind of this attitude of, well, why not? You know, I'm there and it's going to take me 10 seconds, like you said. So why not just bring it home with me too?
No, you must enjoy everything in life the same way I do. There is one standard for enjoyment in life, and if it doesn't meet mine, you are defective. That's what we've learned this hour. All right, that's enough for the show. We're going to get our only break. We're going to come back with Amanda Kearney, an RIT grad student who wrote in her thesis about the uses and gratification of posting selfies on social media. Jonathan Schroeder, professor in the School of Communication at RIT. Selfies as political movement. We're going to talk about that coming up. If you want to share your thoughts on this discussion, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. We're right back. Coming up in our second hour, in the 1980s, the great scientist Carl Sagan tried to debunk astrology once and for all. If Carl Sagan were alive today, he would be dismayed to find out that now more than 50% of Americans under the age of 30 believe that astrology is a valid science. So why has it had such a resurgence? Why are tarot card readings increasingly popular? What's behind all of this interest? We'll explore it next hour. I got a text message from a friend who's listening in Cleveland. He sends me a selfie. And he says, here is me listening to Evan sound old on the radio. Do I sound old? Do I sound old, Amanda?
No, I don't think you
I
sound
get
old.
Off my lawn no. guy, Jonathan. I don't think so. And look, I'm kind of coming around a little. I was a little curmudgeonly about selfie culture when the hour began. But I honestly, I'm hearing a lot from what Amanda and Jonathan have researched and written that moves me. And I said, Dr. Murray's tweet I thought was outstanding, you know, talking about flu shots and just a way to remind people, like, here's mine. I'm a doctor. Here's mine. Vaccines, that kind of a thing. Well, Jonathan, if you don't mind, I'd love to just read a little bit about selfies for political reasons from one of your papers, and then we'll talk about some of these. Quote, selfies are also used in political ways. For example, marginalized groups have turned to selfies to raise awareness about their rights. In the USA, trans men and women have used bathroom selfies and the hashtag #WeJustNeedToPee to fight against proposed state bills requiring people to use the bathrooms according to their sex at birth. Transgender fashionista poets, Dark Matter, also habitually use selfies featuring their avant-garde outfits in order to politicize the need to make visible non-gender-conforming identities. Another trend has been the hijab selfie, in which young Muslim women fight back against Islamophobia and persecution for choosing to wear hijab and niqab by posting selfies of themselves wearing the head covering of their choices. So just a couple of examples on moving the needle. And, you know, now that I think about that, I have routinely seen that kind of an idea. And sometimes in that moment, Jonathan, I don't even think of it as a selfie. I think of it as a political statement.
Yeah, I think the selfie has become so ubiquitous, it's almost like a text. It's just a basic aspect of living. So the selfie, we see it in almost all arenas of life. And so we have to think of the selfie, too, as a tool of self-representation that people who haven't had the chance or haven't had the means or just weren't really allowed to make representations and circulate them now have that ability.
This is where I think it's the most compelling point in support of social media in general, and also selfie culture, because when you think about who has the power to communicate, well, obviously, for centuries, the state has always had the power to communicate, and sometimes the state is the only communicator. There's still places in this world where the state really is the only communicator. When you take away that power from just those in the most power and you give it to people who have been marginalized or oppressed in different ways, it could be an amazing tool for social change. We probably, Jonathan, could point to campaigns that have sputtered out a little bit, Iran's Green Revolution, those kind of things, but we also could probably point to successful campaigns to at least raise awareness or move conversations. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's the social movement use of selfie, but then there's also individual artists. Artists are turning to the selfie for their work. And so we have a lot of young women artists, young women of color, who are taking selfies and they would say it's part of their artistic and political project to show what it's like to be a young woman, to show what it's like to have an eating disorder, to show what it's like to have brown skin, those kind of issues.
Now, we'll get a little bit of your feedback on this particular part of the conversation coming up here, but let me ask Amanda Kearney what you think about selfies in political expression or selfies as part of social movement.
I agree with Jonathan. I think that it's this, we now have this ability for this self-representation and self-presentation, so we have a way of having our voices heard now, and we can find like communities through selfies as well, so other people that are experiencing some of the same difficulties that I may be experiencing, and then with more people, there becomes more power that way too.
And so here is Kat sending us an email saying, I took a selfie with my I voted sticker today.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good example. And so that Kat's email takes me back to last November, a year ago. Wow. The last election day was today's election day, a year ago now, and all of the people who were taking selfies at Susan B. Anthony's gravesite. And you could have argued, Jonathan, why put yourself in that picture? But I think in that moment, the selfie is less about self-aggrandizement and more about a statement that this is something I believe in or this is something I value. What do you think?
No, and it's clearly an expression of democratic values that I voted, my vote mattered. And I think that's an aspect of the selfie that goes back a long time into an earlier form of the self-portrait, where artists use a self-portrait to say, I exist, I matter.
Thoughts on that, Amanda?
Yeah, I totally agree with that 100%. I think that was such a significant event for a lot of people, too, that maybe having that, it kind of goes back to this archiving time, that this is something that maybe I want to have a photo of me with, in this event, in this moment as well.
So, listeners, we got a little bit of time left here, and I'm going to read a couple of emails in a moment. But if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And, yes, some of you are sending selfies to me via email and Twitter. I get the joke. But we are talking selfie culture, and anything you want to weigh in on this, let me read a few more emails here. Kara writes to us from Pittsburgh. She says, hi, Evan. I sew my own clothes, and I definitely use selfies on Instagram as a way to convey information. I benefit from seeing how other people look in a finished item made from a certain sewing pattern, and my selfie is a way to share information with other sewists about fit or fabric selection. I don't have the time to blog or take all the photos that are required for a blog, but I benefit so much from the sewing information that others share that I use my Instagram selfie as a way to share my experience with others. That's from Karen Pittsford. Sure. So, makes sense to me, yeah?
Yeah, that makes sense to me, too.
Well, and I think it speaks to this community that people do build on social media. I mean, as much as we might criticize it, there is a sense of shared values and shared kind of experiences with some Facebook groups, not all.
Here is an email, though, pushes back a little, and it's from Diane. Diane says, honestly, I swear the only thing some women post are selfies. It completely colors my opinion of them. You haven't even addressed the duck face selfie. That's from Diane. First of all, Diane, there's plenty of men who post mostly selfies too, I think, to be fair. I haven't done the research to indicate if selfies are gender specific. I think both men and women. But she says it colors her opinion when she sees nothing but selfies.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense that it would color her opinion in a certain way of the selfie. and especially if that's all she's seeing from these particular women on their Facebook or on her Facebook or wherever. But I don't know if they're doing it necessarily for her as a specific audience either. It's the self-presentation, self-representation. So I think that they're kind of doing this. It goes into that boosting your self-confidence kind of a thing. And if she's not the audience, then, you know, I don't know if they're necessarily concerned with that. They're finding whatever they're looking for through it. So.
Okay. Jonathan, I think what Diane is saying, though, is that she might judge you and she might have an opinion of you based on how you're representing yourself in various forms of media. So be warned that if it's all about you, people may come in the door with an idea about you.
Well, and I think there's an interesting distinction between motivation and skill. I mean, people might be motivated to represent themselves in a particular way, but not all of us are skilled at doing that. You know, not all of us know how to use the right filters and know, you know, how many to post to kind of make sure a particular message gets through.
Can somebody call and tell me what the duck face, what the history of the duck face is, by the way? Anybody know here? What's going on there? I know what it is. I've seen it.
I couldn't tell you where it started.
Diane does not like it. She's not a fan.
Sorry, Diane.
Not a fan.
Well, I set this in a broader context of the kind of society's expectation for the visual appearance of women. And, you know, we know that this is different, that women are judged more on their appearance than men. There's also another interesting fact that Kodak and other camera companies promoted photography to women. So photography was gendered for a long time, that the women were kind of marketed to they would take the pictures of the family and the events. And so we have an interesting gender aspect of how people appear and how people take photographs. And I think in some sense, we see especially young women who are taking photographs kind of making themselves be appealing in this broader world where appearance matters more for women than men.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be very careful because I'm about to speak on something that I just don't have the expertise on. But in my perception, Jonathan is on the money here. I mean, women are judged in terms of their appearance in media, in broadcasting, in everywhere, more than men. And so if we do have, and I'll ask Amanda again if her research indicates that women take more selfies than men, but if even if that were true, would that be an indication, Jonathan, that as girls become women, society is telling them to be more obsessed with their opinions because of the way they are judged? So that might be a natural outcome of the way, you know, we sort of, I think, unfairly judge women more than men based on appearance.
No, I think you're right. There's an interesting project called Selfie City that looks at selfies in big cities around the globe. And most, for the most part, they find that women seem to be posting more selfies than men.
Okay. Thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, based on my research, too, women do post more selfies than men. I think my participants was 70% female, 30% male, and that seems to be about, you know, how people are engaging with this culture as far as gender goes. What's interesting, though, is that there's also research that has talked about selfies as a feminist act, right? So now women are able to choose how to represent themselves at this point. Like we were saying that Kodak was marketed towards women to be the ones taking these pictures, being behind the camera, but now they are choosing how they want to portray themselves. And there's layers to that, too. Are they influenced on how they want to portray themselves based on what society is telling them is attractive or sexy with the duck face or whatever, or are they consciously choosing to say that this is how I want to be?
And is that potentially empowering?
It could be. I think it's not as simple as just taking a picture and posting it and calling that feminist and empowering, but I do think that there's a paradox there and there's layers there that we can still do some research to unfold.
Okay, let me grab another phone call. Carlo in Union Springs. Next, go ahead, Carlo.
Hi, Evan. Thank you. I would say that the phone is like the hammer or the automobile or the television. It's a tool. You use it, you benefit from it, or you be used by it. Let me tell you a very extreme example. A few years ago, I was at the Museum of Modern Art in the water lilies room. I don't know if anybody has been there. Mm-hmm. The water lilies is a huge bunch of canvases. I don't know how many. And there's a flat couch in the middle. And the first time I saw that painting, I was in my teens. I sat there in that space, in that sort of environment. A few years ago, I was there, and a couple of people were walking through with selfie sticks, and they didn't even stop. You know, this is an extreme example, but I think I don't know where we draw the line, how many people do that versus the other thing. But it sort of points up something. You know, survival of the fittest didn't stop when Darwin wrote the book. I happen to think a lot of people's lives have been minimized because they sit in front of the TV from the time they're little. Some people walk out of the house and get in a car to drive two blocks. So I think the phone, the selfies, all that is great. But that line does exist in terms of, do you grow with it or does it minimize you? And I will take the answer off the call, unless you have a question.
Well, I'm curious to know, obviously you feel like there's a line, and it's going to be subjective. Where's the line for you, Carlo? How do you know when you've crossed it?
Good question. I work with kids sometimes, and I have done some substitute teaching, and I see young students walking down the street with the phone. They don't notice the bird that just picked the worm up to bring to its nest. I know I'm giving you an exaggerated
But I take the
but
point.
It's true. And they don't, it's like, be here now. Remember that book? That was back from the 60s. And I think it's keeping, I see a lot of people not being here now. And I don't know if they get over it and then they learn to do better, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And you might have a better handle on that. Like the example that you gave of when you was at the Grand Canyon with your son, I think that's healthy. And that was a beautiful image. And I would imagine and hope a lot of people use it that way. I wonder. It's just when I see it dumbing down, because let me say something else. All this media, television, phones, computers, they're all platforms for marketing. And and I personally can't read something on a computer if I'm constantly interrupted by an ad that pops up. But maybe some people are able to, you know, wipe it away and not get distracted.
Well,
I think people are becoming, a lot of young people are becoming just more focused on this media.
Well, Carlo, thank you for the phone call. I mean, a lot to digest there. I'll start with Amanda Kearney on this one. What do you think about his concern that there is a line, and that for him that line is when the device prevents you from sort of experiencing events in our world?
Yeah, I agree. There's totally a line. And it is, as you said, it's subjective. I think that it speaks to this pressure that we kind of have now of our online performance, that who we are online is somehow representative of who we are in real life. But there's definitely a divide there. So we have our cyber self and we have our actual self. And how much are we enjoying our cyber life versus our actual life, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So there's a pressure to, especially for kids of a younger age, to, you know, make sure that they are present and they are doing things online, not necessarily, you know, in real life as much.
Okay.
No, I share Carlo's concern about how technology is interacting with our life and especially our social interaction. But I think we need to put this in context. When Kodak was marketing popular film in the early 20th century, people started going around taking pictures in ways that they had never done before with the introduction of the Brownie camera. And these people were severely criticized. They were called Kodak fiends, and there was concern about privacy and inappropriate disruptions and voyeurism, you know, back 100 years ago about a different form of technology and photography. So I think this concern about technology has been with us for a while.
Kodak fiends. So there are clear echoes today, right? I mean, everything old is new again. It's just a different form of Kodak fiends that we're learning from Jonathan. Let me go ahead and also read a comment from Mary Lee in Rochester, who called in off air and had this to say. She says, I'm a teacher, and for many of my teenage students, the pressure to curate their lives online causes an extreme amount of stress. I think that's a very valid concern, and I'd like to start with Amanda. Thoughts about her concern about her students who feel that pressure, that stress.
Yeah, that pressure exists, and I have felt that pressure myself, honestly. Eventually you get to a point where you mature and you realize, like, okay, that maybe there are other things, I guess. And I actually have not been on Facebook for several months just to kind of regroup and kind of live in the present. But I had to do that to pull myself away from it. And that's not easy because now you miss out on some things. People invite you only through Facebook, so you don't get to go to those things. So now it's a tough balance, but it's a performance online, and you have to constantly be performing, and everything has to be a certain aesthetic, and everything has to be, you know, it's the filters, it's, you know, it's shiny, it's pretty, it's new, that kind of thing. And we can't always be that way.
There are a number of stories, Jonathan, of Instagram fame, people who've benefited from Instagram fame who've admitted it's just exhausting to take dozens of shots, sometimes selfies, and then to choose the one that looks the most authentic and effortless when it's a ton of effort.
Yeah, the best. Well, no, I think it's interesting to think about how much we use social media today and how little training, if any of us get in social media. You know, thinking of the other big technologies, we have to learn how to drive a car. When computers were introduced, you know, we had to learn how to use a computer. But today we just buy our iPhone and, you know, we get a little bit of setup help, but we don't really get any training nor any kind of reflection. You know, it's not part of the curriculum in high schools as much or college to think about social media in a broader context of how it fits in not just to our lives, but in to the broader society.
I'm going to take one quick phone call from Carrie and Pena, and got to do it in 30 seconds or less. Go ahead, Carrie.
Yeah, thanks. I was just reminded of a friend that I became Facebook friends with first before I ever met her in real life. And when I finally got the chance to meet her, I sat beside her for 15 minutes before I realized who she was. That's how different her online selfie persona differed from her real self. And I thought it was kind of sad.
Yeah, Carrie, thank you. I mean, that dovetails exactly with what we're talking here. And Jonathan, I would think in that situation, it can be shocking to somebody like Carrie, because you wonder, how much effort did you go to create this image of yourself when I would want anybody I know to feel good being themselves?
Right, right. No, that's an interesting part of this paradox. But it also reminds me, I had a conference at RIT in 2016 on selfies, self-portraits, and social media. And one of my colleagues from NTID, the National Technical Institute for the Deaf, gave a paper on deaf selfies. And that was just a revelation to everyone at the conference that for some deaf and hard of hearing people, the selfie has become a really powerful means of communicating with the hearing world.
Some final thoughts from Amanda Kearney, a RIT grad student who wrote a thesis on the uses and gratification of posting selfies on social media. Most important takeaway for the listeners you want this hour is what?
I think keeping an open mind when you see people taking selfies. Maybe let's not be so quick to judge. I mean, I do it too. I think we all are very quick to form opinions, but I think this project has helped me take a step back and kind of realize that people are, they're doing their own thing, and that's who they want to be.
Fascinating tie to history, as Amanda and Jonathan have pointed out. What people were complaining about with Brownie cameras 100 years ago mirrors a lot of the condemnation of selfies today, but also the power of selfies to be part of movements, politics, awareness, and more, especially for marginalized and oppressed groups. I want to thank both of them for being here. Jonathan Schroeder, professor in the School of Communication, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And Amanda Kearney, good luck to you. Thanks for taking the time to come in.
Thank you very much.
All right, short break and much more Connections coming up.